This is Donna Peters back for season four of the award-winning Me Sweet podcast. Here we continue to shine a mic on career-driven, life-minded professionals, sharing our wins and our warts as we cultivate the role we want work to play in our lives. Putting work to work for us, as I like to say. Let's get in there. On this episode of the Me Suite, we are going to talk about a topic called pre-retirement. So if you are a listener thinking about, well, when will I be finished with this regular corporate career? When will I have enough to move on to my next phase? This is the conversation for you. Liz herself retired at the age of 55 at the most senior levels of partnership at one of the largest consulting companies in the world. And she now is the host of the Third Act podcast, where she interviews people who are happily pre-retired about how they are now using their time, treasure, and talent in new and purposeful ways. We have a lot to learn from Liz today, so I'm diving into all those things. And before I do that, as you know, I always will start with core values first.
Okay.
Can you share those with the listeners and how they've driven these key decisions?
Yeah, Donna, and thank you, fellow podcaster, for having me. Yeah, so I thought a lot about this. And what's interesting is I thought about what they were when I was working full-time and sort of what they've sort of evolved to. And I came up with three. One is to be curious as a core value. You know, I'm very curious about people and curious about the world and, you know, continue to want to learn. But I think that's an important quality to have. The second one is to stay humble. And what I mean by that is, and hopefully people who know me aren't laughing going, you humble, but is as I get older and my worldview kind of expands, particularly some of the things that I do in life now, I'm not meeting the exact same type of people I was when I was working full-time. And, I meet students and I meet people in not-for-profit and all kinds of folks. And I'm always humbled by their stories and what I can learn even from, you know, the sophomores that I have in my undergraduate class at the University of Washington. And, you know, maybe one thing that I had to learn after I pre-retired was how to get that back a little bit, if you will. And it's been a really nice thing to do, is to really sort of stay humble, be open, and to really think about, you know, who you're talking to and what you can learn from them.
Yeah.
And the third thing, which I brought over from Accenture, which is to always practice stewardship. And that was a core value at Accenture. It was a core value when I was working. And it's still to this day manifests itself in what I do. So I'm a strong believer in, if you have been gifted with time, talent, and treasure at whatever level, you know, you owe it to the next person to pull them up and to provide those kinds of opportunities for people. And I think I continue to practice that in teaching and in board work and whatever else I do. And I'm glad that core value was pounded into me early on in my career, because I think it's a really important one to have. And it continues throughout my life.
I love this framework that you use, time, treasure, and talent.
Mm-hmm.
Is that the core construct of your third act discussions?
Yeah. So, you know, kind of what happened with the third act is after I left Accenture, I started thinking about what I wanted to do. And I have this sort of football analogy that I felt like with Accenture, when I got close to thinking about retiring, that I was running down a football field with the football, and that I would make it over the goal line of retiring at Accenture, but I would barely make it. Like the ball, like my hands would be out and the ball would go over and the ball would touch the end zone. And maybe I wouldn't quite make it all I'd be gasping because it was such a hard job and I traveled and I had three kids and it was just a killer job. But what actually ended up happening was I went over and I looked around. I'm like, you know, I'm 55. I got a lot of energy. And furthermore, I had treasure because I, you know, was fortunate enough to make enough money to retire. I certainly had a lot of talent and I had time. And when I, you know, retired or pre-retired, I, you know, read some books. My husband had curated some books on the subject and they were all terrible because they all just talked about, particularly as a woman, like you're not going to have enough money, you know, don't let your husband leave you,
nice.
Get a hobby like sewing. I'm like, what? You know, this does not fit me at all. And he was pretty selective in his books. And I did find one pretty good one. But you know, I just felt this need to give back and mm-hmm. I just didn't think I was done yet. So yeah. that's been sort of my theme.
Okay. So I love it, but I want to back up.
Okay.
All right. So define for me and for the listeners what you mean when you say pre-retirement.
What I mean by pre-retirement, and actually a friend of mine coined that, was when you think about retirement, you think about doing absolutely no work, right? You're literally doing maybe hobbies, you're golfing, you're traveling, mm. you're spending your time doing more leisurely things. I mean, that's sort of the classic definition. So pre-retirement is sort of the step before that, where you still might have some part-time jobs. You might have a heavy volunteer job, that type of thing. Mm-hmm. And what I also kind of mix into it is when you leave your big career job, or what I call your second act. So when you're done with that, you know, what do you do next? So that's pre-retirement.
Okay. I love it. So you left at 55.
I did.
I left at 52. How did you decide that you were going to do the official corporate big job departure?
Well, fortunately, I didn't get booted out. So that was good.
Right.
But it goes back to stewardship. I, you know, the position that I'd had before I left was a great one. It was actually my favorite position of all at Accenture. I ran our Microsoft account. But I had set up some goals for what I wanted to do there. We'd achieve those. And I felt like it was my turn to turn that over to the next person. Mm. And when I looked up, I mean, there really, and you know this, there weren't that many roles left, right? Because, mm-hmm. you know, I was already a senior managing director, and it was clear to me that I could stay and there would be other positions, and I got offered other positions, but there would be more lateral moves mm-hmm. because there just weren't that many more spots above me. And the people in those spots weren't necessarily leaving for a while. And it just really felt it was time.
Yeah.
I also had a son in high school. I have three children. So my youngest one was still in high school. So I thought, well, you know, maybe one kid would get 1 year of me as a mom. Uh-huh. And it just, you know, kind of all coalesced to be the right time to go.
Yeah. And so you didn't have the awakening about third act, though, until after you left. And now you're helping us be a little bit more proactive.
Yeah.
About
I mean, I wish I would have thought it through a little bit more because yeah. As I said, I thought I would really be exhausted uh-huh. and I wasn't.
Yeah.
And I thought it would take me a while to become unexhausted.
Yeah.
And it didn't.
Yeah. Okay. So I want to know what you learned when you got on the other side that you can now teach the listeners as they're thinking about, do I retire? When do I retire? Can I adopt pre-retirement? What have you been learning out there from the okay. interviews?
Well, I'll tell you the funniest thing I learned was, like, I went to the mall on a Monday.
Uh-oh.
And all I could think about was I looked around and I'd learned I was somewhat judgmental about people who looked like they were my age, who were not with a stroller or with an older person, like helping them. Like, why aren't you working? Like, what are you doing that you're in the mall right now? So I got over that pretty quickly. So, you know, what I've learned is, first of all, it's a real privilege to be able to have the time and the treasure to do this, right? And what I've learned from the people that I've interviewed is sort of several things. First and foremost, you know, everybody I've talked to in my podcast does have the financial means to stop their big career. Okay. So even if they've got another job, they've usually pivoted to something totally different mm-hmm. where maybe they're not as dependent on a big salary. So that's, I should set that out. But first is, if all the women are giving back, and they're giving back to other women. And in almost all cases, it's because if you think about those women, most of them are in their 50s or maybe early 60s or late 40s. They didn't have any other women
yeah.
to help them. Or if they did, it was maybe one. Mm-hmm. And so they don't want the generations that follow to have that happen to them. So they're very specific about trying to pull other women up. And you know, you and I were talking before this started about a friend of mine, Heather Redmond, who I interviewed, and she had stayed home with her daughter for a while, but she started, and she was working part-time, but she really, she knew that she wanted to see more women who were women CEOs and women entrepreneurs. And she knew the best way to do that was to provide money to them to be successful as a VC. And she said, that's really where the power is. And that's how you can help women the most. So she formed her own venture capital fund, Flying Fish, with a couple of other friends, right?
Nice.
So you see, and I've got story after story of women doing that. And then I would say similarly, the men that I've interviewed are doing the same thing. I would say the difference though is it tends to be a little more either religious or philanthropic in nature.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, on today's Third Act show, I interviewed Tim Breen, who was Accenture's former chief strategy officer. And, you know, he ended up becoming the CEO of World Relief Services,
yeah,
which is a large Christian humanitarian refugee resettlement organization. And he was doing parts of that while he was still working at Accenture. And, you know, it was a huge job and lots of work, but he went on to do that. And so in all cases, people are finding a way to give back. And it's usually based on something that is of core interest to them.
Yeah. I remember one episode I listened to, you interviewed somebody also at the height of his career, as you were, who went on to compete in extreme sports.
Oh my gosh, Jerry. Yeah, that was hilarious.
Yeah. And he's been doing, is it Ironman competitions, right?
Oh my God. It's more than that. It's Ironman. It's extreme Ironman. It's, you know, you name it. He just walked from Huntington Beach to Virginia Beach,
yeah,
or walk and ran. And the thing about Jerry, the thing I loved about him is that, you know, he had a really interesting perspective on the United States because he walked and ran across it and people and the humbleness of the people that he met.
Wow.
And hopefully he ends up writing a book about it because it's really quite inspiring, yeah, to hear what he has to say.
Yeah. I also enjoyed another one where someone had a regular, what we would call a corporate career, and then became a professional cook.
Oh, Lauren. Yeah, she, so that's interesting. There's another thread here for people who are thinking about pre-tiring is she didn't really know how to cook when she got married and she took it up as a hobby. And then on Saturday nights, she was always hosting all of her friends and she really started thinking about, could I do this for a living? And she had a big job at Hallmark, really big job. And she just got to a point where in her 50s, she's like, I'm done. And so she turned her cooking into a career of being an influencer on Instagram. And as a matter of fact, it's Lauren Lane. Her Instagram is brilliant. She's got a blog of food. And now, you know, she's sponsored by different brands to produce recipes for them. I mean, talk about a big change.
Crazy.
And she did it all on her own. Like she had to learn all of it herself.
Yeah.
But she parlayed like a hobby of hers into her third act job and career.
Yeah. It really is amazing to me because I just want to remind everybody listening that these people are doing this mostly in their early to late 50s. And that's like,
yes, that's right.
That's like tomorrow. That's not really that long from now. For
start
most,
thinking about it.
Start thinking about it, but also get energized by it.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. So, there's a great book out there called The 100-Year Life that if you have kids in your 20s, if you know people in their 20s, you should have them read it. Because basically what it posits is that if you're born today, the odds are you're going to live to 100.
Mm-hmm.
And so your life will not be in sort of what we call the sort of three traditional chapters that we think about now, which is sort of school, work, retirement. It will be school, work, break, work, break, work, break, work, break. And you'll end up working probably into your 80s because you'll need to. But you can't work from 20 to 80 nonstop. Maybe you can, but it talks about how to take those breaks and how to start thinking about, you know, your life in that context. And I think for me, you know, I'm not sure I'll live to 100, but I also don't think that I'm, you know, I retire and then I'm just going to do leisure, right? I think there's a little bit of that 100-year life that me and my guests are exploring as well.
Yeah. I interviewed a financial planner in season one of the podcast. And we were talking about retirement, early retirement, doing nothing in retirement. And he said, no one plays golf all day and feels good about themselves.
Oh, I don't think that's true. He might think that, but believe me, I know a lot of guys who think that's heaven on earth.
So I do want to go back to something.
Sure.
When you mentioned time, treasure, talent, treasure, a significant component of the ability to think about pre-retirement is having financial security in whatever way that is defined.
Yep.
And I do remember also listening to an episode where you had someone who had this wonderful quote of talk to your honey about money.
Money, yeah.
Yeah.
And what, your kids.
And your
kids.
Okay, great. This is where I wanted to go. What are you learning from these conversations about the way we should be having financial conversations with our loved ones earlier in our 30s and in our 40s?
Oh, that's a great question. Yeah. So Manisha Tokur and Tamma Smith, they're doing a Women in Wealth series with me on my podcast. And it's women in wealth, but take the women out of there. It's anybody in wealth because their advice is just so great. I mean, you know, they give these examples of, and I think I could probably say it's true in my house as well, where, you know, you have a two career couple who's all they're doing is making money, right? And they're making money and they're, you know, they're both working and they're buying a house, supporting their kids, going on vacation, and they're doing it sort of side by side and everything's fine because their incomes are enough to cover all their expenses. But what they're not doing is thinking, you know, maybe they have a financial planner, but maybe they're not really thinking about things longer term and they keep putting those conversations off. And then what ends up happening is you get to a point where you want, you know, maybe one person wants to step out of their main career or they want to retire or whatever. And maybe they're not ready because they haven't thought it all the way through, or maybe there's significant tax implications. So I think, you know, number one is you got to have some sort of plan. And I think the earlier you start that planning, the better. And again, Manisha and Tamma give some really great advice about sort of the numbers that you need to know, you know, sort of how much you're spending every year and sort of what number you need to retire. And that's going to change. I think the other thing is, you know, there's two other constituents that you have to understand in terms of money. One is your honey, right? And hopefully you can get in sync with that. The other one is your parents, because I think many of us in this generation will have exceeded income-wise sort of maybe what their parents made. And you need to understand, so what does that mean for, you know, elderly parents? And, you know, will you have to support them? You know, what's that going to be like? And the earlier you can start talking to your parents about that, I think the better. That is an extraordinarily difficult conversation to have because most parents are very proud and they, you know, want to support themselves, et cetera. But the cost of getting older is just increasing and people are living longer. And then the third constituent is your kids, right? And if you're fortunate enough to have some money that you might think you're going to pass down, I mean, I didn't come from anything, right? I mean, like I went to college, paid for it myself, et cetera. And I look at where I'm at today, and there is some potential money I might be able to leave to my kids. I mean, that just is somewhat of an appalling thought, you know, and I hope they're not listening, but not that I don't think they could manage it, but it's like, gosh, you know, you got to think about those things, right? Yeah. Like what, you know, what does that do to them and their self-esteem or if they get married? And these are things I never had to think about.
Yeah.
And so as you get ready to sort of step out of your big career and start really thinking about what you're going to do next day, start, you know, keep those things in mind. Because the sooner you can start framing some of that stuff out, the easier it will be.
So I want to dig into a little of the experience that you had because you've been on a journey that we can all learn from.
Yes.
So after you left this terrifically successful career, achieving all of the heights that were available to you at a time when that was an unusual thing to do for women.
It was.
It was. When you got on the other side of what we're now calling pre-retirement, were there certain, I'll call them talents or hobbies or passions that you rekindled that you had had a lid on that entire time you were doing the career role?
No. And that was, no, sadly, you know, that, and that has been one challenge I've had with being pre-retired is that a lot of people that I interview have had passions and now they're doing it. Like Kim Alexis Newton was a master quilter and, you know, she worked for Hallmark for a long time and now she's back doing fine art. I worked, I had my kids. I always wanted to learn to play the piano. So I am doing that, but I wouldn't call that a passion. And it's kind of funny because I have struggled with that. Like, okay, well, what's my passion? And now I have all this time to do it. I'm like, well, I don't really have one, right? So I have, you know, picked up some other hobbies. I'd love to travel. I think the travel bug is, you know, part of what came out of Accenture as well. I get a little itchy if I'm not on a plane. So like last year was really hard for me. But no, and I think I'm a bit of an unusual because a lot of people I talk to have picked some of those things back up, whether it's a sport or an instrument, or they'd love to write, or they want to write a book. And I keep waiting, like I'm going to wake up one morning and go, oh yeah, oh, that was my passion. Cartwheeling, I don't know, but I haven't figured that out.
Yeah. So if your month is a pie chart, what size of the pie slice is it for I'm bored?
Oh, none.
Never.
Never.
Yeah.
Never, ever. I mean, me and boring is a bad combination.
Okay.
Yeah, that's lethal to everyone in the house.
Yeah.
So, because then if I get bored, I get really crotchety. Mm-hmm. So yeah, we don't want Liz being bored.
Yeah. As you were moving through your relationship and your raising of the kids, did you have a deliberate checkpoint where you would, I'm making this up, you would check in annually on your family as like a family strategic plan, vision boarding? Did you do any of those things that we today are teaching people to do?
No, and it's terrible. Uh-huh. One of the things that Jeannie Diefendorfer and I talked about, she was an old client of mine and she's also on the podcast, is she called it leaving the unit behind. And the unit was her husband and her kids. And how she made decisions when she was working sometimes independent of them.
Mm.
And I did too.
Mm-hmm.
And which is unfortunate. And how now she's realized that even when her kids were younger, that they probably could have handled the sort of decisions, should we do A or B? Should mom do X or Y? I mean, when we moved to Seattle in 2011 for me to take this job, I certainly involved my older son because he was in high school.
Yeah.
So, and I if he would have voted no, I wouldn't have come. But, otherwise, it was my career was me and it was, as you know, all consuming and, mm-hmm. and I was doing it. And in retrospect, and I give a lot of credit to women who I see now working, they're much more thoughtful about spending time, with their children and drawing boundaries. And I was not very good at that. Mm-hmm. So that's a regret of mine for sure.
Yeah. I'm very, very hopeful about the future of leadership.
Yeah. Now, so much better.
Yeah.
So much better.
Yeah.
And, honestly, the pandemic, as bad as it's been, and certainly if you had kids at home, I always say if this would have happened when Katie, Jack, and Will were all in school, somebody would have died. It probably would have been me because I can't imagine trying to do the job, my husband doing his job and trying to keep the kids going at school. But, I see dads so much more involved
mm-hmm.
and I see many dads who have sort of come like, oh my gosh, I'm not going to go back to the way I was, right? I see how hard it is to do all this.
Yeah.
I think it's been good for that. I think it's been good in the sense of, there's been a bigger recognition for how hard it is to work and raise kids simultaneously.
Yeah. I was doing a little bit of research on the topic of leadership this last year, looking at a lot of reports and books and data. And every time you saw a definition of leadership, it would have stuff on there like visionary, strategic, provides direction, communicator, listener. Mm-hmm. Not until 2021 did empathy show up on the leadership list.
Finally.
Yeah. Which surprises you not at all.
No, not at all.
Yeah, but
no.
I thought that's what's giving me hope. I have a lot of lot of positivity about the future of leadership and where we're headed.
I did too.
Yeah.
I did too. And I tell my students all the time, like they'll always ask me, what was it like to be a woman at work? And mm-hmm. I'm like, I can tell you my experience, but I can tell you already that things have changed so much.
Yeah.
That, the environment that I operated in is not going to be the environment that you operated in,
yes.
You're going to need to operate in, which is good,
yeah.
Much better.
So based on your own personal experience with pretirement, all of the interviews that you've been learning from with
yes.
your Third Act podcast, do you have a learning for a 30-year-old listener, a 40-year-old listener, a 50-year-old listener?
You need to be financially stable in order to pretire. To have the time, talent, treasure to do whatever you want.
Uh-huh.
So if you're 30, I always think that those are the years where you should really be maximizing your earning potential, uh-huh. right? And so you really ought to be leaned into your job and making sure that you're in the, function, career, whatever, that you're pushing as hard as you can, okay? To whatever you want to do. But you need, those are really good years to be earning money. And same way within your 40s. But when you get into your 40s, I think it is smart to start to think ahead. And what I would really think ahead would be is when I'm 65, what do I want to be doing?
Mm-hmm.
And so if I'm 40 and I'm thinking about that, I'm probably like, well, that's so far away, but I have no idea. But just put it in the back of your mind and start to see if, start to put some, maybe a few lines in the water of things like hobbies that you might want to be doing, whether it's certain kinds of travel or sports or whatever. And to the extent that you have some time, try it out. Again, while you're still moving towards your financial plan. And then when you're 50, I mean, you need to make sure you're ready to go, right? So you need to be working with your financial planner and all of that. But that's where you really ought to be thinking like, okay, I'm going to have all this time on my hands. What am I going to do with it? And again, start joining some organizations. You know, a friend of mine retired and he said the first year he just said yes to everything. And he was telling me, he was an Accenture guy too. He's like, oh my gosh, Liz, so many things out there. And Lauren Lane did the same thing. And I did the same thing too. Like, okay, I'll come to this conference and I'll come to this meeting and all the things you used to say no to. And then you start to sort them out, right?
Yeah.
And I think in some ways, if you can start to do a little of that before you retire, you'll be in a much better situation when you actually cross over that line. Because you'll be excited. You'll be like, oh, I love those three things. And I'm really going to spend, I get to spend more time doing those things once I'm done with my big job.
Yeah.
Because it's a loss to leave your big job.
Yeah.
It's a huge loss. Like your self-esteem, you don't have a card. Nobody calls you anymore. You used to get 200 emails. Now you get two, you know, it's just, it's a big change.
Yeah.
And they move on. They're like, once you're gone, they've moved on.
Yeah.
So
that was the biggest learning I had. I interviewed several people who had retired from the type of job that I had had. And I interviewed them before I retired to say, well, what was it like and what should I expect? Uh-huh. And the main feedback was, you will be shocked at how quickly they don't need you anymore.
They don't need you the next day. Yeah, it's done.
It's done. And then I thought,
it's a good thing.
Exactly. I thought that's a good thing because my retirement requires your stock. And I want your stock to continue to perform well, which means I am not indispensable.
I have the same thing. You're like, keep going.
Woo-hoo. Yeah. Yeah. This is awesome. So, you know, I like to close with some advice for our listeners.
Yeah.
And I'm really curious to see what yours is. So knowing we're trying to lead with a me-suite mindset, knowing you're coming with this expertise around the third act experience, what advice do you have for us of things we should start doing differently on Monday?
Well, I think, you know, I've sort of said some of it, but if you're not in a situation to be financially sort of stable yet to retire, you're not on that plan, I would say get going on that plan. You can, again, go out and listen to the Women in Wealth podcast on Third Act, or, you know, read or talk to your financial advisor. But I just think that's really important to sort of understand what it's going to take to leave your big career, right? If you are in that position or if you're getting close to it, there is one book I would absolutely read, which is called Younger Next Year.
Okay.
And I read that before I retired. And there's unfortunately a male version and a female version. Just read the male version. But the premise of the book is really good. And it basically says, you know, if you want to die, this is just a thought. If you want to die skiing when you're like 98 or whatever you love to do, right? As opposed to being hooked up on machines for 10 years, then you got to do basically two things. One is you have to exercise constantly.
Yeah.
And secondly, you have to have friends. And there's more to it. And the book gives the science of it and it gives all these ideas. And it fundamentally changed the way I think about the years going forward. So I'd read that book. And you could read it before you retire as well. So do that. And then again, I think if you're in the position, start thinking about how you're going to spend your time and what you might want to do to give back. Because I think that that's the most fulfilling way to spend your time. Yeah. And I just feel like, you know, you think about your listeners and us and the people who are sort of within 10 years older than us. I mean, none of us had to go to war. None of us, you know, we're a generation of just privilege.
Yeah.
And I just feel really strongly that, you know, we are in this fortunate position to be able to give some of that back.
Yeah. Well, there were a lot of things that you could have been doing with your time and your treasure and your talent right now. And you chose to spend it with us here in the MeSuite. So I am extremely grateful. And I will have these resources that you have available, the Third Act podcast, your book recommendation in our show notes for the listeners.
Thank you.
Really appreciate you joining us here today.
Oh, thank you, Donna. It's been really special.
This is Liz Tinkham, everybody. Thank you for spending time in the MeSuite. If you have ideas for topics you'd like discussed this season, contact me at themesuite.com or on LinkedIn. I'd love to hear from you. And remember, 5-star ratings and reviews keep us alive out here. They really do make a difference.